today on Code Pen Radio.
Hey, everybody. Code Pen Radio number 295. We're not going to hit 300 before the year's out. Wah, wah. That's okay. You know, the point of this podcast, everybody, right? It's like what it's like running a software product. And so it's us just talking about all kinds of different stuff about running CodePen and the community and the technology and the, I don't know, software that we use and software that we leverage to run the site and all that stuff. Maybe our favorite kind of episode is when we get to do a technical deep dive into, like, this is how we do things at CodePen. Not even because we're experts, although we hope we are to some degree, because we have to make software that supports millions of people. So we better know what we're doing a little bit. But because, you know, I don't know, we like to evolve our tech stack. We are big nerds in that way. And we have done some major deep dive nerd work lately on some infrastructural stuff into some features of CodePen. Marie's here. Hey, Marie.
Hey, everybody.
And Marie and I think maybe it was just us two. I can't remember. We did like a hype episode almost about new projects. And we talked about what you can do with them and why it's cool and why we're excited about it. You remember that?
I sure do. I don't know about the audience, but they can tell us.
And I think that me and you the whole time were like, you know, just wait. We'll dig into the tech of this. But for now, we need to tell you about like what it is. Because yes. there's just a lot to it. Now, it's not a total turning on its head of what Projects was able to do before. It's just that now that we've done this work, it's, I hate to say this, but way more reliable and way faster mm-hmm. and way more fun to work with. It has some little features that have unlocked big ideas in Projects. And all of a sudden, it became this area that we're at CodePen. We're a little bit like, I don't know. Nobody poke it. It's weird over there. To this, like, oh, this is like great. This is super modernized place where we're all very comfortable working and are excited to evolve. And it very much feels like a big part of the future of CodePen. That's a damn big deal. So yay, go Projects. Please give Projects a try if you haven't on CodePen. They're working great now. In a huge reason for that is Dee, who's on the podcast today too. Hey, Dee.
Hey, Chris and Marie and everybody out there.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Dee, you've been at CodePen for a long time, but are working on that first year back as a big time developer of CodePen, right? Everybody knows that.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I listened to y'all's episode talking about Projects. I was like, Chris, you blew my cover, dude. No one knows that I'm married to Alex, and no one knows that we do weird stuff on the weekends where we think we can rewrite Projects all in 2 days. That's not how it goes.
I feel like your last name might be a slight giveaway about your
I think the last name and the matching portraits might give people a
little too matchy-matchy. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, you even went the next mile and live together.
We do. Like, really we do weird. Live together, but we might not see each other. Like, I have one floor and Alex is in his basement lair, which I'm not allowed into, especially when he's like deep work focus time. So, you know, boundaries sometimes.
I understand. That makes sense. I went so far as to have an office across town for that reason. So you came back and we're like, let's throw the absolute hardest problems at D. Oh, here you go.
Yeah, that is what happened. Absolutely. And I have to, you know, we're coming up to the end of the year here. We didn't have you on the Thanksgiving episode, so I didn't get to say thank you to you for this, but you have fixed so many tragic bugs that were just like things that I had learned to live with. And I have to just give my appreciation to you for making so many things work so much better. You have really brought a breath of fresh air to CodePen and have probably prevented me from getting even grayer than I already am with the things that you have fixed.
You are far too kind. And as our friend Rachel has said, no worries, mate. I can't do the Aussie accent properly.
No worries, mate.
That's not it.
Oh, no, Chris. No.
Did I nail it?
But we can try again. But no, I feel you on the gray hair bit because I feel like I have gained a lot of gray hairs in the last 9 months. But it's amazing to hear the impact it's made on your life and then the users' lives.
It's kind of cool because they were support concerns.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and it was
hear
measurable.
About it if I mean, it affects in users.
We looked. We looked at the support stats, and once those fixes started going out, it got to the point where support got so quiet, yeah. we were a little concerned. And we looked into, like, what's going on? Is everything still the same? Is sign up the same? Is pro sign up the same? And they were not just the same. They were better. So, you know, yes, fixing bugs. I recommend it.
Yeah, it makes a big deal for support. You know, it's like you could either staff up your support team to deal with your busted ass product, or you could fix your busted ass product.
No. Not like busted per se, but like y'all's strategy for like bringing in new people and making them feel like welcome is basically like, there's an outage, go learn, which is like kind of exactly how I learned about project. And I think that was maybe my like first few weekends like as like a full-time dev. It was like emails and projects. So mm-hmm. hence the gray hairs. But I think like to y'all's point about support, I think that projects was kind of giving us the most trouble and kind of you guys talked about it last time with the observability factor and not yes. being able to debug as well. And so, but I remember thinking back, like kind of just like a intro to like the CodePen code base, which I'd like kind of known a tad because the team had actually come to my house to like plan out projects on the first CodePen in-person retreat back in 2016. And I remember like seeing you guys whiteboard it all out and how excited you were. And you were like, let's use a new technology of React and Redux and Docker containers. And I was like, wow, these peeps are so ambitious and they're going to do amazing things. And you did because we have projects. But I think like... seeing up to the first few weekends of my time here, we were like, okay, we got to give this guy some love, basically.
Absolutely. Yep. And that's where you came in and that's where you executed. And you have really, really made a huge difference. So I think what people would love to hear about is what did you do? How did you do this? Because Chris and I were not able to share those details in the last episode.
Well, there's just a couple of angles to it, some of which we'll talk about today and some of which we won't. Some of it has to do with like, okay, do you all know what projects is? It's like, it's different than a pen. It has a whole file system on it. So you're a little bit more kind of quote unquote on your own, right? Like you, like an index.html file, you have to create that and you have to type in that name and get .html right, because that's how we're going to know it's an HTML document. And then it's got the full doc type and head and everything in it, which is different than pens. Pens just assumes that you're writing whatever's inside the body in an HTML document just for brevity and simplicity. That's just different in projects. So projects is just a kind of a different place. For example, if you want to use Less, the CSS processor, you name the file .less and it will know that that's what you mean and it will process it in that way. That's different than in pens where you have to go into the CSS settings panel and change your dropdown that says I want to write in less. You know, they're just different a bit. And that full file system is more like real world development. So, you know, that's what it's like when you're actually working on software, work at a company, on a team, on a website or whatever. Ultimately, it comes down to that. You're going to have a file system like that. And technologically before it was kind of like, oh, we'll spin up a Docker container and we'll mount the file system inside of it. And we'll watch that file system with a gulp watch task. And it will, when files are changed, it will look at it and make all the changes and stuff. Now, Dee can walk us through all this, but had technological problems, a variety of them and large ones. It was slow. It was hard to debug, yada, yada. And so that's kind of all gone now. And it was largely Dee who worked on the replacement of it, which is kind of just better in all ways. So is that where you want to start?
Yeah, for sure. And I also have to give massive props to Rachel, our wonderful Aussie developer who y'all might have heard on the podcast before, because when I came in, it was 100% like hit the ground running, that we had an outage with like projects previews. And so Alex and I kind of spent the whole weekend learning about aspects of the project's infrastructure. And what was huge was Rach has this like beautiful yet insane diagram of how all of it works, the client side, the server side, the Docker containers, and she's got like the function names and descriptions. And with that, I remember literally printing out that diagram and studying it so that I could understand what was happening. And then, as I'm sure everyone here knows, we use Notion a ton. And I went through kind of some of the retrospectives she'd written as well, where there had been outages, and looking at like what were the problems. And what was also great is that she had written retrospectives on the technologies that were used. And I, as we were kind of saying earlier, using Gulp and Docker, it was brand new to us at the time, or I always say us, but like the team, I was there in spirit, I guess. But the Docker was new to us, Redux and React was also new to us. So it's tough to use brand new technology and then also get it right, and also on such an ambitious idea as like file system and immediate processing. So it was super helpful just to use her documentation and understand what was going on. And she'd already kind of like pinpointed the problems. We also have this like chat on Slack where we're kind of talking back and forth with like, what would we do differently? And I heard about like Merkle trees from Rach and Alex. Like, they'd spent a lot of time debugging it and pinpointing the problem. And then anytime there would be technology advancements, they'd kind of post into the Slack. And I'm just kind of listening, like, what do we need to change in the system to fix it? And so I'd say that's kind of like where the story starts, is we call this projects 3.0, as in like the third massive iteration, because we did end up replacing pretty much the entire infrastructure. And hopefully that's, you can see that on the, when you're using projects itself. But first and foremost, what was huge was technology advancements within the industry. So we've been saying that we're using Docker containers a ton. But the way that that system was designed, you kind of have a Docker container per file system for each project. And building out those Docker containers, orchestrating it, making sure the software is up to date, like what version of Node are you using? What version of Gulp are you using? Between the time that we had launched projects in March 2017 and now, Gulp had gone through like two massive iterations, and Gulp is used to like process like SCSS or Nunjux or whatever other fancy language type you're using. And all of that needs to be updated kind of constantly, right? And then the other piece that we were using was something called Amazon EFS, which is just Elastic File System. And what that does is you can connect to Amazon's file system through like the internet, through the network, through requests. And EFS is been designed to be incredibly reliable and durable so that your data never gets lost. But what that means is if you want durability, it might be super slow. And then we're also processing a bunch of files, and that takes a lot of time. And so you might see like a spinning indicator on the project because we're doing all this massive processing and saving and talking to EFS and then another Docker container there, which means there's the latency as you're making the network request. And then we got to make sure that once it's been updated, the client hears about it and the client can tell you via the UI that it's all done. So lots of pieces there. But one of the biggest advancements was on like June 18th, 2020, like I'll never forget, because Slack channel was popping that day with links to that blog post. But basically, AWS provided support within their Lambda functions, their serverless functions, to be able to connect to that Elastic file system from within the Lambda itself, like over the network. And there's a bunch of stuff you have to do, like creating access points and making sure you've got proper permissions for who can access your file system, which is sitting in, you know, a certain subnet availability zone, all that stuff. And before, we had kind of had to manage all that ourselves. And now, and we had had to, like, you know, set up the server that was going to connect to EFS and maintain it, make sure it had the most modern versions of the software that we needed. But with AWS Lambda, which Chris can probably speak to a ton because that's kind of a big, like, bread and butter piece of our architecture in terms of how we make the pen editor run as well, we don't have to manage the server aspect and creating the server and all that software. We can actually just call the Lambda function. AWS will turn it on for you, like a warm it up. That's the, like, the only delay. But you call that Lambda, that server, only when you need it. And AWS takes care of making sure it's there, that the server is up and running, that it can actually process the work that you're giving it. And so being able to put all that work on AWS within the Lambda, but then also utilize their APIs to connect to EFS, which was another service we needed from within that Lambda, that was a big, big breakthrough for us, basically. And so none of this would have actually happened had that not happened.
This episode of CodePen Radio is brought to you in part by WooCommerce. WooCommerce is a plugin for WordPress, for your, like, self-hosted WordPress site. Although, you know, if you use WordPress.com and do e-commerce, it's basically WooCommerce powering it too. It's just kind of like in there for you. But if you're like, have self-hosted WordPress sites, like I have a whole bunch of, and you're like, you know what, I'd like to sell stuff. Well, you have options, but, like, not really, because WooCommerce is, like, the biggest and the best of them. And it's free and open source, so that's kind of cool. And then it starts costing you money when you need plugins for it, like you need your store to do something really specific that's not just kind of like built into the core product, then there's third-party plugins, but WooCommerce themselves makes a ton of them and are officially supported and really well done. I use WooCommerce a bunch. It's active and quite successfully, I think, on CSS Tricks, doing stuff like selling MVP memberships, so you can, like, read the book and extra content and not see ads and yada yada. This just works great for that, but I also sell posters through it, which has been kind of cool, and then those get sold through a third-party seller, so there's a bunch of, like, interesting tech happening there. Big fan of WooCommerce. They are this, so I'm coming at you live here, December 2020. They're rolling out some new UI for WooCommerce. One of them first was the homepage 2.0. So it just looks a lot better now. Like, when you just go to the homepage of the plugin, there's, like, an overview of the store and, like, quick actions that you can do. You know, they really, like, are like, let's make that, like, a good experience for the admins of the store. So I think that's a big, nice improvement. But the one that I think is even more dramatic is, like, the sidebar navigation. Now when you're navigating the WooCommerce area, that, like, sidebar along the left in WooCommerce is, like, totally redesigned. It's almost, like, a bit shocking almost the first time you see it. You're like, oh wow, that's, like, super different way to navigate on the back end of a WordPress site, you know, kind of, like, takes over, and you can it just makes it, like, a more complete store-like experience while you're inside of that area. So it takes some getting used to, but I think it's going to be a big improvement, because there's definitely moments. I was just yesterday, I was thinking about this. I was trying to get to somewhere specific in my store, and I'm just like, where is that again? I need this particular report because I got to pay out this person that's related to this and yada. And I was like, where is it? And I think now that I'm looking at this new navigation, I'm like, well, that's going to be a lot more clear. So don't underestimate the power of design in products. Look forward to that in WooCommerce. So a lot of things died knowing that we could take advantage of this. So for one thing, you didn't even mention this yet, but Gulp is dead because it doesn't need. So that's a component that goes away. Not that Gulp is a bad product or anything. It's just we could eliminate it because of the way that we're able to process files. And the fact that each project was in its own little Docker container, which we thought was so clever at first, we only did that out of necessity, not because we like loved the idea of it. And that overhead was a ton. Not only was it slow, it had to be orchestrated. So imagine there's 1,000 people playing with projects on CodePen. That's 1,000 Docker containers in the sky all blah, 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 doing its thing, which is tricky and expensive and slow.
And something that we kind of talked about, we did this like post-mortem, let's try to learn everything we can, is like the traditional relationship, the client-server relationship. And one thing that was hard in our previous system was when a user comes into their project, you have to check that the Gulp container that's going to like run their specific files is up and running, right? So that means like the client's got to call our Gulp container and it's got to check, is it running? Is it up? It's not. Okay, let's bring it up, which takes time, which means the client's kind of like waiting that whole time. And so that was the issue there with the speed. And so the reliability that you mentioned.
When somebody writes in that says, oh, what's wrong with my project? Oh, don't worry. Let me go find your container, I guess, which none of us were really super qualified to do. And like, reboot it, I guess. I don't know. You know, whereas with Lambdas, we all write in them all day long. We're just very comfortable with that, like, oh, it's a little Lambda. You just spin it up and you do it. And it's really easy to deploy and it's easy to work with locally and all that stuff, which is just wonderful. So the local dev story got super good here. Now, we were already using EFS. So when a project spun up its Docker container in the sky or whatever, it would then mount the EFS volume. Now, EFS is important here. That's the elastic file system that Dee mentioned, because it's like, if you're in the pen editor, imagine you just write some SCSS. Now it's like, ooh, we need to process that. We'll shoot it up to a Lambda, process it, and send it back. Well, one thing you can't do in the pen editor is write an import statement that's like, well, I actually have 4 SAS files. I want to process them all together. Now there's this thing called pens as resources and stuff. Let's not get all into that. But a lot of way that people are used to writing SAS is, here's my like site or my like style.css file, and it imports like 5 or 6 other SCSS files sitting right next to it in the file system. That notice I said file system, like pens don't really have a file system of today. So we needed to have a real file system for those files to literally sit next to each other on a file system. So when you write, you know, import typography.scss, it's behaving just like SAS does. It grabs that file, it processes them together. It's not faked. It's not weird. It's not some kludgy CodePen specific thing. It's just how SAS works. And so we are already using EFS. So now that we could mount that EFS in a Lambda, it was like a little bit, you know, less intense of a change. Now inside that Lambda, we can be like, oh, I got the file system right here. I'll just run the processing. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. What's nice is that, you know, it's just like the file system you have on your computer, right? Those same APIs, like your operating system, when you open a file, when you save a file, when you delete a file, that's what EFS replicates, those same APIs. And instead of the files on your computer, it's the files within the project editor that you're working with, right? So like, you don't want to reinvent the wheel on how like computers work. You want to reuse that technology. And it goes back to the whole promise of serverless functions and, right, like serverless development, so to speak, which is... And that's really interesting to us here at CodePen, because we are focused on the front end. And those are our customers, front end developers. And so we want to be able to focus on making sure that the editor is as fast as possible, that we can give you as many languages to use as possible. Everyone loves Vue right now, and that might change tomorrow, but CodePen, for it to be valuable to you and helpful to you, has to be able to deal with that change. So our bread and butter, our core competency and expertise is that front end processing and development experience. So anytime we have to spend orchestrating Docker containers, learning about EFS and or another new AWS server, that's just time that we can't spend on the editor itself. And so that was a big learning and incredibly one of the big reasons we've seen this massive improvement is because this Lambda and EFS connection was launched by AWS. So they're taking on more of the DevOps and backendy work so that we can focus on making sure that as soon as you move the file, you see that change, like it's imperceptible how quickly it happens in the project editor. And that was a really big deal to us. And it could not have happened without this announcement from AWS in mid-June. And what's funny is that like we didn't necessarily like plan on doing it right away. Like we were all focused on how are we going to improve the experience for the project editor. But at the time, we're also working on this massive DevOps migration. And you've heard us talk about it, rewriting deployment scripts, using a new orchestration service called ECS within AWS so that we could do that same thing, kind of offload DevOps management work to AWS as much as is humanly possible, and also just kind of like modernize that stack, which probably get to talk to Alex because he's the man there. But as part of that process, we're using this tool called Pulumi. And Chris mentioned it on the last podcast, but it's this whole other area called infrastructure as a service. And it's the same concept where you can codify whatever you're doing infrastructurally, like how many servers do I want to have? Do I want to auto-scale them based on a certain amount of traffic? If it like peaks to this amount, add me 3 or 4 more services so that CodePen is still super fast. And then going even deeper, what's the hardware, so to speak, that you want to pick out? Like, with, you know, there's a certain type of AMI instance that you may want to choose for stuff that's like image intensive, where GPU, the graphics processor, is more important. And so you can pick different instances of compute for your service to run on. And that's all like DevOps land, but you don't want that to be in one person's head. At CodePen, we always talk about like, what is it? I think we're going to patent it. The bus effect, Marie, you know this.
Oh, that's not us. The bus factor, which is the idea that if one person gets hit by a bus, you need to be able to keep the company running. And you know what? We've been on thin ice there for a while.
Yeah.
But we're getting better about that.
And Pulumi was huge for that. This infrastructure as a service, like instead of it being in Chris's head or Alex's head, it's actually in code that I could go read, Marie could go read and look at, okay, what type of AMI are we using there? And that's what Pulumi does. What they do is basically like replicate AWS or Google Cloud or Azure and say, they have these services. Tell us what you want to set up. And what's cool is when you set up infrastructure, you can also be like, replicate that as a staging environment so that we can test it on like, you know, a staging URL to make sure everything's functioning before we promote it and release it to the production environment. So there's all kinds of bennies there, and Alex can tell you all about it. But as part of that process, I was kind of learning how to use Pulumi, and they have this amazing blog post. So when we got that announcement from AWS about Lambda, you can actually connect to EFS from Lambda, Pulumi has this great blog post where they show you how to do that with Pulumi. And another great, amazing thing about Pulumi is that normally DevOps stuff, oh, you have to use like a YAML file or like a TOML file, like stuff that we as developers aren't used to using a ton, right? Like we're used to using JavaScript and maybe, you know, a really cool language like Golang. The beauty of Pulumi is that they let you use the language that you know how to use, that you have mastery over. They support TypeScript, Golang, and I think it's one, Python. Yeah, they started out with Python. So we here at CodePen are used to writing a lot of JavaScript, and I'd actually been
learning... They don't support JavaScript? You have to write TypeScript?
Oh, yeah, dude. But that's great. That's so good. That's
great.
You know, it's amazing. Say it. Okay. Say it. No, I'm just kidding. No, it is really good because... it is a statically typed language, which it was my first experience, like last year I was learning Swift, and Swift is super intense with their like static typing. Like they are very, very strict. They don't give you any leniency, but Golang is a lot more chill. TypeScript, I think, is pretty chill-ish, maybe. I don't know. You might not agree, Mr. Chris. But yeah, the reason they use those type languages though is because so that you can check and make sure you're not making mistakes before you compile the language, so that because in situations like this where you're dealing with your infrastructure, it's really nice to be able to say it wasn't a fat finger typo thing. You know, you want to deal in the concepts of like which services should I put together? Should I be using EFS with Lambda or not, maybe, you know? And so with the static typing, it's really helpful in the ops world, I think, because then it's like a layer of bugs that you just eliminate because you're forced to, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like anytime, what it means to me is that anytime anybody goes into some website that we use that's super important, like the AWS console or whatever, and has to like click buttons to do things, that immediately you're like, nope. Like you're saying, that's bus factor crap. Nobody was there to watch you click that button. There's no record of what button you clicked and why and what and where to go find it again. So the second you do that, it'd be like, oh, no, that's got to be, I think you said codified. You know, it's in code. Write it in the code instead and then ship the code, and that code executes or whatever. That's the part I don't understand. Like, what is it, their servers then interpret that code into API requests that do those things? I guess that's how it must work, right?
Well, yeah, it's actually exactly. That's exactly right, right? Like they're taking, like they have an API, they have a data model to interact with AWS. So I forget the name, like a provider, for example, it's just like we do on our end. They have objects that you're used to working with, and you just specify, these are the resources I need. Here's like a hash, set this many servers. Here's a task definition. So they just like hit AWS. They use another service called Terraform to use the API documentation for all the services that AWS provides. And then they just kind of like translate that into TypeScript or Golang so that you can work with those resources, just like you're writing your Lambda, for example. And I actually wrote the first version of this while I was like learning it, the demo. I wrote it in TypeScript and then we translated into Golang when we realized how much potential it had for us. Because at this time it was like an unproven technology. And so we were like, oh, this could be so amazing and solve so many of our problems that we currently have, that I think it was like a Sunday night. The next day we came in, we're like, hey, check out this project's infrastructure replacement plan. We got to talk to Rach after our all hands. Like, Rach, is this, what do you think? Is this possible? Would this work? And that's why it was so huge to have her there with us, because she knew the system so well. And she could just like very quickly pop in there, look at that code and be like, cool, this is gone, that's gone. And, you know, it was great to design the entire system with someone who'd built it herself, you know? And then kind of like, I feel like we've just like talked that to far too much detail there. It could get even more boring. But like what I was super happy to see was the effect after we were done, like one of my favorite parts, because Chris, you know how to work with JavaScript, you know how to build Lambda functions. I loved, like, there was some bug and you were like, hey, D, can we look at this bug? I was like, for sure, dude. Let's go through the new Lambda. Let me tell you what it does. And you like got it in seconds. And you're like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense. And then you're also the king of like recreating the problem in a test, which I'm always like, oh, I know where the problem is. I'll be faster if I just go fix it in the code. That'll be faster, which is not a good idea. You are great about going in, recreating the problem as a test, and then fixing it in the code itself. And that was super, super, what's the word I'm looking for? Like gratifying to see how quickly the rest of the team just like picked up these concepts and were able to fix bugs. Literally the next week, like you and Steven were just like going at it. And then like, I think we took a little break because a little bit of a burnout after this big old project. And then like, while I was not supposed to be on Slack, I see you guys like changing the UI. I'm like, oh my gosh, this looks beautiful. What are you doing? This is great. And so that was just super gratifying to see everyone kind of jump on it. And then to see the feedback from users too. Like one of the users that we talk about a ton, Christopher, she's like, I use projects to deploy my personal site. I was like, really? She used our project editor?
Yeah.
It made my day. It was amazing. And I think it was like the first day.
That was the best part.
Yeah. Oh, I was like, oh, thank goodness you waited like a week so that we could get this out, because we had a full list of people in support. Remember, Marie? We were just like tracking them.
Oh, I sure do. Yep.
And you probably came in and saw the responses, and it was probably another like big layer of relief for you to
yeah,
see
I
that.
Also thought it was pretty cool for people to hear directly from the person who fixed it. You know, I think that that's kind of cool. You know, the person who fixed the problem that's been bothering you for, you know, in some cases, kind of a while, to actually hear directly from the person who solved that problem is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's my favorite part. Yeah. And I felt so much guilt because I told people, oh, yeah, we're going to have it done in 2 weeks. And 2 months later, okay, we finally fixed it. Like, never give timelines ever again.
No. Yeah, you can't. You can't. You do just have to, because you have to maintain expectations. And you know, it's better to underpromise and overdeliver, you know?
Yeah. And then, Chris, you're like our guy for projects as well. We knew that the only way we're going to get this right is if you were banging on projects, using projects and being like, okay, I'm enjoying this. And that was great to see all the work you guys did with the new templates and things like that. How was the experience for you? Yeah.
Yeah, good. I mean, you're right that right after it went out, we had a few weeks of like finding edge cases and fixing them and stuff too, but it was like doable because, you know, there's like literal observability there. You can run this whole stack locally, you know, almost trivially. You know, there's a few little tricks of the trade we had to employ to get it going. But, you know, console.log is our friends as JavaScript developers, you know, and now we're kind of like, oh, what happened in this project? I can just find where that processing is, console.log, what's happening, and literally figure it out. And what I mean there is like, literally, like, this file moved, this file changed, this file was processed by this processor, like any step of the way, there's none of it that feels magic anymore. Really none.
And
of
the
it.
Coup so, de grace so that Chris stuff. That took like weeks was using serverless offline. We literally mimicked calling a Lambda locally on your computer. So normally, you know, you're in the project editor and we make a request to AWS to the Lambda, right?
Right.
We mimicked that on our computers locally on dev. And we saw
serverless offline running. Is a big deal.
That was such a big deal. Mm-hmm. You should talk to Alex about how he did that, but that was so helpful for the observability.
Yeah, I've used that for everything. Yeah, it's like, it just seems like such an obvious thing that's like unfortunately harder than it should be. You know, it's like, do you're writing code. Do you want to be able to run it locally? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, what the frick, you know?
Yeah.
So
I know.
You can in this way.
But why is it so hard?
That's been satisfying. So, you know, it works better. We chase down little problems and stuff. It kind of has that it just works feel to it. And you know, a lot more of the team feels comfortable debugging it and stuff. And we get, you know, it's cheaper, it's faster, it's better, it has more abilities. It's just one of those things where as soon as it was done, all million dominoes fall that make us all feel so happy. You know, support's gone. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And now we have a million things because now we're like, oh, you know what still sucks about it, though? The front end, you know, not for users, but for us. Because like Dee said, it was one of those we wrote
right,
a long time ago and we made technological choices at the time that were just like, I don't know, I guess we'll just use this. Yeah, Redux. And I'm happy to jump on the overused cliche train that Redux sucks because it sucks. Redux sucks.
Uh-oh. Well, and we've also spent a lot of time with React now making these like beautiful reusable components. We have a library that like we're not able to reuse as much within the project editor, but we've got plans for that, don't we, folks?
We do.
Well, right. So this is we intentionally didn't decide to rewrite the entire editor. I mean, we've cleaned it up, we fixed some things, we made it nicer in a lot of ways, but we didn't fundamentally rewrite the editor. And you know, I don't know what else to say about that because I don't want to spoil too much, but obviously the editor is kind of important to us at CodePen because it's like the thing that we make in the world. And we've spent an awful long time cleaning up stuff that's tangentially related to the editor. So maybe we should consider focusing on that in the future. What do you say?
I like that plan.
You're a genius. You're a genius. I like it.
Yeah, needless to say, this opens a lot of doors, you know, and now we have Dee, you intimately know this thing, you know, Alex is not alone in that world. Rachel's obviously, you mentioned her a million times in this episode, is highly competent here, but both Shaw and I are in there fixing. Now we have the whole team knows what's going on in there. Kind of a big deal, yes, you know,
a big, big deal.
We had our very first like kumbaya pairing session, the four of us, Steven, Coyer, Alex, and I were just like kind of doing like an intro of the project's editor. But there's so much change that's gone out, so many commits related to projects and the Lambda. I don't think I've like added more than a few lines to it. It's been all the rest of the team, which is amazing. Like, that's the greatest challenge of building software, is being able to just drop it into another teammate's hands who didn't build it at all, and they can get it and hit the ground running and start making improvements. Like, that to me is the most successful sign of any software that you build. And I think we did pretty well in this case.
That's right. You did.
This podcast even came from not so much that one session, but you did a internal sharing thing for the team where we didn't all work on it together. So that's such a healthy thing to do on a team, is then write up a ton of like, okay, I'm going to explain to you how all this works. So, you know, lean back, make yourself a cup of tea or whatever and soak in this, because Dee just like explained all of how it works. So we can all just kind of watch and understand. That's different than getting your hands in there, but still it was very useful, rather than just being like, well, it's out, bye, you know. Doing a sharing thing is cool. So that sharing turned into this podcast. It might turn into a blog post, it, you know, whatever, who knows.
And that came out of talking to Steven, and I have to give him major props as well. He was like, hey, it'd be nice if you guys shared like what happened and what you learned so that we can, you know, learn from that as well. And I was like, you care, bro? You care? Amazing. Of course. Let me make a, you know, massive presentation and bore you to tears now. He'll probably never ask me again.
It was very useful, and it's helpful for the whole team because not all of us work on it. Obviously, I don't directly work on that at all, but it was very useful for me to get an inside look like that and to get a picture of what we're doing, what these things are for. I mean, people are saying Pulumi around me. I didn't know what it meant. Now I do. So
yeah,
these things really do help the entire team.
It's great. It's like a living, you know, experience that we all shared, and it's great because it gets us on the same page, and then whatever work we do going forward, we won't forget what we learned through this process, because it's invaluable, right? Even though like it wasn't perfect the first time around, we learned how to make it perfect because of that, you know, and we don't ever want to forget that, and so that we can make it even better next iteration.
All right. Well, we dug into a little bit into the Pulumi stuff and all that, but maybe we can talk a little bit more infrastructure at some point. Hopefully, no promises, but we can grab Alex to do some of those things. Because there's more to this, you know, like how does it get deployed and what did it do to our AWS bills?
Oh, he'll talk your ear off about that. I think I hear about it every single day. Not kidding.
Yeah, he's been on a mission to be like, we spend 32 cents over here. Turn that off.
Yes.
I love it. I love it.
It's not music to my ears. Never seen a side of him. I'm like, what? Who are you?
All right. See you later, everybody.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.
Six, zero, three, one, eight.